today we're speaking on the eighth commandment, which is simply, thou shalt not steal. And you say, well, there again, preacher, you spent almost an hour preaching on thou shalt not kill, and it's pretty evident what God meant, and you could have gotten by with about 59 less minutes. I'm thinking, you know, stealing is something that, you know, perhaps your life has been touched by theft or stealing, something like that at some time or another. I know when I was in college, I was my whole world was turned upside down by theft because this beautiful girl stole my heart. Okay. We all pay the price for stealing.
I went to jail.
Women keep silent in the church, dear. The prices rise because of shoplifting. We were told in a survey that one out of every 50 shoppers in a supermarket will walk out with items they didn't pay for. We're not talking about taking one or two of the grapes as you're going through that you're going to buy anyway, but we're talking about thievery. According to the U.S. Department of Commerce, 4 million people are caught shoplifting every year, and for every one caught, there are 35 who get by with it and don't get caught, which means there's 150 million shoplifters in this room, we have. And what's tragic is only 10% of the thievery in our stores is from low-income people. 70% is from middle class, and 20% from people who earn at least $150,000 a year. And they're shoplifting. They're stealing from it. Every afternoon, a fellow from Tijuana crossed the border into San Diego, into the U.S., and he came by on a bicycle, and the, you know, customs agents there were concerned that maybe he was trying to smuggle something or do something, so they checked him out. He looked good. The next day, up he comes again to go into the U.S. Day after day, he comes by. They keep checking. Finally, they said, well, wait a minute. We're going to take apart the bike seat because there might be some bags of drugs or something under the seat. There wasn't. A few weeks later, they said, let's take apart the whole frame of the bike because he probably got drugs down the steel tubes in the bike there. So they took it apart, nothing there. Finally, they took out his tires, thinking that maybe he was smuggling something that had been vaporized, and so they checked that to see. Then they refilled it up with air and let him go on by. And one day he came by and told the customs agents that this was his last time coming into the U.S. and that they would never see him again. And the guy said, well, just tell me, what in the world are you smuggling into the U.S.? And he looked at him and smiled and said, bicycles. Well, are we a nation of thieves? We got a report from one hotel in Las Vegas that the first year in which they were in operation, they lost 38,000 utensils, knives, forks, or spoons, 18,000 towels, 355 coffee pots, and worst of all, 112 Gideon Bibles that were stolen. Well, we can groan, we can shake our heads, but you can't try to justify stealing. And so let's look at it with the familiar outline where we'll look at the Old Testament, the New Testament, and then modern day as to what's embraced in this concept of thou shalt not steal. And by the way, what's the opposite? If thou shalt not steal, then what would the thou shalt be?
Give.
Give? That's part of it. Jesus will teach us about that. And the apostles will teach us that the opposite of stealing is working. Earning the money. Earning the goods rather than stealing. So I've entitled my notes, the eighth commandment is work. And right under that is a note about tell the story of Teresa stealing my heart. Yeah, work. Okay. In the Old Testament at Sinai, we know that God entrusts possessions to certain individuals and that others are not allowed to take them without due process. This comes from God. This is part of like the preamble or the beginning of the Constitution or Declaration of Independence. I get them mixed up sometimes, but I stand. That says we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, the right to life, the right to liberty, to do, to work, to have, whatever, and to pursue happiness. That we have that. So, broadly speaking, when we think of stealing, and when God said simply, thou shalt not steal, we have to think of it in two categories, an active category and a passive category of what stealing, because active category deals with, you know, maliciously taking something that doesn't belong to you. And so I've listed a few words that we might understand of active stealing. When God says, don't do this, don't rob. Okay, are we all pretty much good on that one? Okay. Robbery takes things that usually involves force. It usually involves a weapon, but not always. You rob somebody. You rob them of what their goods are. Another word is the word stealing. Stealing comes from the root stealth. That is going in and robbing, but secretly. You're trying to burglar them or pickpocket them. Do something stealthily, sneakily. Okay? So robbery, stealing, fraud, involving getting possession by deception. And we all get that. I'm sure that you get emails every day from Nigeria saying that, oh, if you only send them so much money and give them your social security and name your firstborn child after them, they'll send you $1 million or whatever it is from the fraud. Embezzlement. We've been going through that locally in the Mills Township over across the river, where there's been embezzlement of tens of thousands of dollars by one of the officials who simply used the county credit card to pay her electric bill. And a few other things. So we're familiar with that idea where we misuse or misappropriate funds. These are active things that we do. Extortion, that's a little more physical in there, where you gain possession of another person's property by use of force or threat. You extort them. You compel them to pay more for a product from you, to get protection. In my neighborhood, I grew up in the inner city, and in my neighborhood, there were groups that went around and they said, we will protect you if you give $100 a month protection money. And if you didn't, your store might be vandalized. Your home might be set on fire, probably by the same people who are trying to extort the security money from you. The people in Puerto Rico are in desperate place right now. Puerto Rico, which should never be part of the United States and doesn't belong to us, and I don't know why we have it, but their whole infrastructure, their electric grid, everything is still down after the hurricanes. And there is food coming in and sitting in warehouses at the airport. I've never flown in there in Puerto Rico, but my wife has flown into San Juan there. And all sorts of buildings. And the food is rotting because government officials are trying to get it out to people, but they want some kickbacks. And they'll say, well, we'll send a truck to your village if we get something back in return. Like you'd think of a third world country in the middle of Africa somewhere. The graft and extortion there. By the way, Jesus said in Luke 3:13, Jesus said, collect no more than what you've been ordered to. And the soldiers, after hearing that, him talking to the government officials, the soldiers said, what about us? What do we do? And he said, don't take money from anyone by force or accuse anyone falsely, and be content with your wages. You can imagine the Roman army having total military control. They could take whatever they want. And I'm reminded of the story of the army in the American Civil War, and the general told his troops, "We'll camp out in this field." And he said, "You can only take the top rail from the fence that goes around the field to cut up and use as firewood." And so, you know, one company of men went out and took the top rail off of the fence and went back to start a fire. The next unit came out and they took the top rail. And then the next unit came out, and pretty soon there was no fence left as each one did that. Another one that seemed odd to me as I was studying this is kidnapping, is stealing. Think about it. It is. In Deuteronomy 24, if a man is found stealing a brother, one of the Israelites, if he treats him as a slave or sells him for ransom, he should die. Kidnapping is stealing, whether it's to have a slave or to earn money. That's active there. I think all of us can say, well, I don't do that. I'm not going to pull out a gun and hold somebody up. I'm not going to extort them. This is cool. I'm not going to sneak into their house. I think we put a picture on the front of the bulletin of somebody sneaking into your house while you're here in church and taking from the security cameras. But the passive thievery is something else. We've got to think this whole thing through. When he said don't steal, the passive theft is when we end up with something that somebody else owns and we have it, and we refuse to give it to them. There's a wonderful verse in Leviticus 6:3 that says, if you find something lost and lie about finding it, swearing falsely that you never got it. Now, what does this sound like? Finders keepers, losers weepers. That's the modern translation of that verse, Leviticus 6:3. I just found it. It was there. I don't know whose it is. And here it is. And if somebody asks me and says, hey, did you find that $20 bill that dropped out of my pocket in the store? And you smile at them and say, I don't see it anywhere. Because you can't look in your own pocket where it already is. You're passively stealing. Negligence, where you, because of your negligence, deprive your neighbors of their land or their food or whatever it might be. You know, you just walking, just happened to be walking through their yard and saw some nice ripe apples, and so you just took a few dozen. And bosses, employers, passively steal with unfair wages, not giving what should be given. You know, a day laborer, according to Leviticus 19:13, is to get his wages at the end of every day. And there would be people who say, no, you didn't work hard enough. We'll pay you a little bit more and we'll do it tomorrow. And the guy might not have money then to go and buy bread because he's living day to day, hand to mouth. Keeping back from supporting the poor, the alien, or in the case of Israel, of the Levites. That's tithing, by the way. If you ever hear people, you've never heard me preach on tithing because I don't believe in it. That's for today. The tithe went to support the Levites in the temple ministry and the clergy that were there working, and that was what it was. They paid taxes that were different than the tithe. The tithe was to help the temple ministry. Well, you know, folks, we don't have a temple ministry. We don't have Levites. And so in the New Testament, it's amazingly described that we should give, we should share, we should have offerings, but never once should we tithe. Yet you'll hear all sorts of preachers in some churches about every other sermon on why you ought to give more and you ought to tithe more and so forth like that. Time theft, estimated at $70 billion a year, from the deliberate actions of employees who just arrive a little late for work. They take unjustified sick days. They socialize with their friends. They do their own work at the desk and on their computer while they're supposed to be doing their job. Take long coffee breaks or snack breaks, or like me, just daydream away time and steal from their employees. So, you know, you've got all these different things. Those are passive acts. So thou shalt not steal. And then, of course, you bring it in a whole nother level of stealing from God, which is found in Malachi 1 and 3, where we honor God with our finances. In Malachi 1:13, they're talking about giving to rebuild the temple and serve God, and they say, oh, how tiresome this is. You disdainfully sniff at it. I don't care. You know, just I hear the same message over and over again. And you bring what was taken by robbery and what is lame or sick, and you give that as your offering. Should I receive such things from your hand? Malachi 3, from the days of your father, you've turned aside from my law. You've not kept them. Return to me, and I'll return to you, says the Lord. But you say, how should we return? Will a man rob God? Yet you rob me. And you say, how have we robbed you, God? And he says, in your tithes and your offerings. You're cursed with a curse because you robbed me as a whole nation. Bring to the storehouse that there might be food in my house, and test me if I'll not open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing for you till there's no need more. And so we have an obligation to God. Stealing is not just against our neighbors. It's not just against our nation. It's not just against ourselves. Stealing is against God. Now, in Judaism, as we look at Hebrew history in the Old Testament era, we'll see that all theft is judged. That the thief will have an attitude that he can get by with it. King David writes in Psalm 10, verses 3 through 11, the wicked boasts of what his heart wants. The greedy man curses and spurns the Lord. The wicked is haughty in his countenance. He doesn't seek God, and his thoughts are, there's no God. And his ways prosper sometime. You know, the thief gets by with it. The judgments are waiting on high, out of his sight. As for his adversaries, he snorts at them. Okay, we have Malachi saying he sniffs at them. This guy snorts at them. I love the Hebrew language here. He says, I won't change. And his mouth is full of cursing and deceit, and oppression. Under his tongue is mischief and wickedness. He sits lurking in places in the villages. In hiding places, he kills the innocents. He stealthily watches for the unfortunate, and then afflicts them and catches them and draws them in his net. David knows what it's like to be sneaky and steal. Remember last week's sermon? He stole his wonderful soldier Uriah's wife. He looked and he ends up by saying, and this man says to himself, God has forgotten. He'll never see what I do. And that's the way the thief looks. I can get by with that. Not a big deal. Solomon, we used him last week as an example, too, of the thou shalt not commit adultery. He says in chapter 1, verses 10 and following, my son, if sinners entice you, don't consent. If they say, come with us, let's lay in wait for blood, let's ambush an innocent and swallow them alive and take and fill our houses with their spoil. Just throw in your lot with us, and we'll have one purse. I can almost hear Jesse James talking about this to his buddies, saying, just, you know, let's get this. We'll get on there, we'll rob the train, we'll rob the rich and give to the poor. And we're poor, so we'll give it to us. And I know my grandfather, who passed back in the 60s, told me as a young man that he said, I my family loved Jesse James. We grew up in Iowa, and Jesse James was like a hero because he would steal from the railroad, from the stagecoaches, from everybody else, and then he'd just give it to anybody and spend the money, and everybody that was around him got wealthy. I thought until Jesse James, by the way, my grandfather's name was Jesse James Griffin. His parents named him after Jesse James. Until Jesse and his gang said, well, we can get more money if we just go rob a bank up in Minnesota, because there's, you know, Minnesota, they don't even know what a gun is, you know, and we all know the story of the Northfield raid there. But this is what is coming across. This is what criminal minds think like. The proper attitude should be, as Solomon concludes in chapter 30 of the Proverbs, he says, two things I ask of the Lord. Don't refuse them before I die. He said, keep deception and lies far from me, and give me neither poverty or riches. Feed me with the food that is convenient, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be in want and steal and thereby profane the name of my God. So the example is given here of the need to evaluate our hearts, not be caught up in these things. And of course, this all deals with covetousness and greed. Remember I said the last five commandments are all tied together, because we are covetous and we kill, we commit adultery, we steal, we lie. They're all linked together in this destruction of society. And I believe I entitled the point The Crumbling Society, because this is what happened in Israel. Their whole system of life fell apart. Preying upon the most vulnerable. How evil this was. In Hosea chapter 4, the prophet writes, listen to the word of the Lord. For the Lord has a case against the inhabitants of the land. There's no faithfulness or kindness or knowledge of God in the land. Instead, there's swearing, deception, murder, stealing, there's the word, adultery. There's violence and bloodshed. The land mourns. Everyone who lives in it languishes. When you can steal and get by with it. By the way, what happened to the gal across the river here who stole the money from the Mills City Council? How long is she going to spend in prison for doing that? Look it up. You'll find out. We'll work it out. Slap on the wrist. There's problems that come. This is what happens in society. Isaiah chapter 1:23 says, your rulers are rebels and companions of thieves. They love a bribe. Bribe. There's a B at the end of that. They love a bribe and chase after money. They do not defend the orphan and won't listen to a widow's plea. The psalmist said in Psalm 62:10, don't trust oppression. Don't vainly hope for money from robbery. If your riches increase, don't make that the center of your heart's desire. Proverbs 10:2, ill-gotten gain does not profit. Righteousness delivers from death. They had a plan. One of the plans that God laid out in the Torah, in Deuteronomy, was to help people not lose hope, that they don't need to steal, they don't need to try and connive or fraud or whatever it might be. Because every 7 years, all debts were canceled. Every 7 years, all slaves were set free. Every 7 years, it was the Sabbath year to the Lord. That's a pretty good deal if you think about it. If I'm going to buy a slave, I'm going to look and say, wait a minute, in three more years, the seventh year is going to come up. So I'm only going to get that slave for 3 years, so I'm only going to pay so much money for him. But knowing that I might have debts, knowing that I might be in bondage, and remember a lot of slavery was because they didn't have the money to pay their debt, so they tried to work it off by in slavery. God had it all set up. And by the way, every year of Jubilee, which is after seven years, 49 years, on the 50th year, all the land that was in Israel went back to the original family. So basically, you weren't buying property, you weren't buying land, you were renting it until the next year of Jubilee comes along. And then you have to give it back. And so the Jews had that. They didn't need to steal. They didn't need to have the wealth concentrated in the hands of a few rich bankers. The land reverts to its original owner, and the year of Jubilee comes for all the people. So, in the Old Testament, they should have known, but obviously they didn't. In the New Testament, we see under the ministry of Jesus how he expands and teaches on this idea of thou shalt not steal. He deals, first of all, with the corrective aspect of it, restitution, and then with the cure for it, sacrifice, that we should give. We should work, but we should give. Under restitution, the Old Testament had talked about it. It was very careful under the letter of the law that, you know, if you took an ox from someone, then you should give him four oxes in return. If you did, so, you know, if you read in Exodus 22 and Leviticus 6, it goes into minutia detail to try and help the Jews understand the principle of restitution. It was a sacrificial system. There was a means for the thief to repent, to make restitution, obtain forgiveness, and have a real place in society. Now think of how our system works today in comparison. Right now, if someone steals, well, they might get a slap on the wrist. They might get a community service for a while. Usually the person that was stolen against gets nothing or very little in return, especially after court costs and all that go on there. But the idea is that what had been spoken of very detailed in the Old Testament, Jesus just said, if you steal, what are you going to do about it? And the case in point is the little guy caught up a tree. Remember Zacchaeus' story? You all sang that as children, right? Learned about Zacchaeus? And Jesus saw him up the tree, and that's a good illustration of the human condition without Jesus. And he brought him down and said, "I'm, you know, going to go to your house." And Zacchaeus, you know, knew he was a thief. He was a tax collector. He could set the rate for anybody he wanted. So if he saw somebody made a lot of money this year, he could just set a little higher rate for the rich, and not so much over here. And he could just feel, and then the government would say, okay, you had 100 people to collect from, we want $100, a dollar from each of them. Well, he might have collected $2 or $5 or $10 from each one, and he could pocket the rest. The guy was a thief. And Zacchaeus says in Luke chapter 19, in I think it's 1 to 10 is the story there, but I think it's verse 7 or so, he tells Jesus, when he said that he repented, he said, I'll repay four times the amount that I stole. I'll go back through my ledgers and give back four times what I stole. Because that's what God wants, is restitution. That's the wisdom of God and the failure of the present approach. Restitution keeps the offender out of prison because he's making good on his debt. He is kept in society. He's kept as part of the nation. He's enabling him to make his offense right by repaying the victim of the crime. The victim gets the money. He's better off. And both the offender and the offended, or the offendee, live together. Remember, society in this day was very local. Chances are, if something was missing from your home, it's probably a neighbor. It's not some foreign person that just, you know, came in on a boat lift from Cuba or something. It's probably just someone who lived nearby you and saw you had something. So you go to the judge, you get it taken care of. And so our system today is totally a failure. That's why I appreciated Chuck Colson's ministry of the Prison Fellowship, where he tries to reform the criminal justice system that we have today, tries to work with the people, work with their families to help pay the victims so that there's a self-image there, that you're not getting by, or you're not just getting punished and you're going to spend 20 years in jail. And who's being punished with that? I am, because my tax money has to pay for the guy being in jail for 20 years. So Chuck Colson set up his ministry, and we often support it with the Angel Tree as we give gifts at Christmas time towards the families of some of those who have been incarcerated. We had dear friends that lived down in Rollins. They taught in the public school for 30 some years. And they said it's just devastating to see what prison does to the families, to the wives, the children. Everything becomes a welfare. Everything becomes hate the state. Don't hate the crime. Don't try and make good on what was done, but to hate that you were caught. And anybody who's done any jail ministry knows that there's a lot of people who are repentant because they're really sorry they got caught and are in jail, but give them a chance, they'll do the same thing again. Jesus moved on from that idea of restitution and talked about a cure for crimes of stealing. That if you deal with it, that we should be generous, that we should give, that we should see people in need and help them. We should work with people that have struggles. Do you ever feel guilty when you're making peanut butter and jelly sandwich lunches for the homeless and the needy? I don't feel guilty about that at all. I feel good. You say it costs the church hundreds of dollars to do that, and hours of people's time making the sandwiches. But what a blessing. Because we're trying to put together what God said is the way to stop stealing, stop the problem that we have in the community of this area of thievery. Jesus said in Matthew 5:42, give to him who asks. Don't turn away the one who wants to borrow from you. In Luke 6:30, give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes away what's yours, just say, it's a gift. That's hard. A lot of what Jesus says is hard. Luke 6:32 and following continues on there. He says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even the sinners love people who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that? Sinners do the same thing. But if you lend to those whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that, to receive back the amount that they lend. And then he stopped and said, but love your enemies. Do good, give, expect nothing in return, and your reward will be great. And you'll be the sons of the Most High, for he himself is kind to ungrateful and sinful men. In a former church, we started an Isaiah 58 box. Isaiah 58 says that we should give, that we should help those in need. That stops them from having to steal. And we had people bring canned goods, and we had a box, and then it ended up into three boxes, and then it ended up into the church kitchen cupboard until we filled the whole cupboard up with boxes of high-quality stuff we could give away. Like, what did we give away? Macaroni and cheese, a big favorite, right? I don't eat the stuff, so I was happy to give all I could to the Isaiah 58 campaign. But we gave it away. And I remember we had a deacons meeting, and the two deacons in the church said, I don't like this. The people come in, and they could be working, they could be earning money, but they're just out there loafing around, and then we give them food, and they're not even thankful. They might not even need it. And if we give them food, they don't have to buy the food, so then they can use their money to buy booze and cigarettes. And they had a whole sermon worked up for me. And I said, what they do with the food is not my problem. My problem is that God says, I need to be generous. I need to give to the needy. I need to give and help those. And God will sort it out. Folks, that is hard to live. Because you see the people and you say, they're just wasting it. It doesn't matter. I don't care. God wants me to be generous. He wants me to be helpful. He wants me to be down at the rescue mission cooking supper, or out there with our sack lunches, handing them out to people who may need them or not, but I don't care. I don't take down their name and say, how much money did you make this week? I give to them. And that way they don't have to steal and profane the name of God, as the psalmist said. So Jesus twisted this around to make sure that the people weren't just giving, thinking we'll get something back out of the deal, we'll loan them money and we'll make interest on it and we'll become rich. So just do it. Because this is what God does to you. You don't deserve a penny. You're ungrateful and evil men there in that verse that we just read. In the church, the early Christians developed this even greater. You know, they put their food together and had things in common. You have to remember that at the day of Pentecost, some people had been in Jerusalem for the feast, for the Passover, and had been there for 50 days waiting for Feast of Pentecost. Then they were going to go home. And if you look in Acts chapter 2, it lists 13 different nations around the Mediterranean that these people had come from. They're going to go home. Well, a bunch of them got saved. They're going to stay there. They're going to learn. They're going to grow. And then go back to their homeland. Who's going to feed all those people? And they're Baptists, so you know they're going to eat a lot. Yeah. Who's going to do that? Well, the church put everything in common. They said, just pile your money together. Open up your home. Be generous to these people. We don't want them to be... Well, there was no welfare system like we have today, but we don't want them to become thieves or steal or something like that. We need to help our brothers. We need to do the opposite of what Judaism was doing. Remember, in Judaism, the scribes and Pharisees, the leaders of the Jews, used their power not to help people, but to oppress people. In Matthew 23, Jesus said that they devour widows' houses. Woman loses her husband, she's got kids to raise, they've got a house, no income. Difficult. The scribes and Pharisees go in there and the term used, devour. I like that picturesque word. In the church, James 1 says, you want to know what true religion is? It's help the widows and the childless, or the children, the orphans, in their distress, and keep yourself pure, unspotted from the world. That's James 1:27. That's what Christianity is all about, different than Judaism. We help them. Philippians 2 says, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard others more important than yourself. Don't look on your own personal interests only, but also look for the interest of others. Have this attitude in you that was in Christ Jesus. The church talked about that evil four-letter word, work. Jesus said, give. They followed it, but then they said, okay, you know, what's the opposite of stealing? It's working, earning your way. And two passages that my dad taught me. My dad was not a Christian and did not pretend to be one. But my dad found some verses somewhere. Probably mom gave them to him. And said, you got to teach this boy to work. You know, we can't be just a lazy kid and sit around watching Mickey Mouse Club all day long. You got to teach him how to work. Some of you that don't know about Mickey Mouse Club, I'll talk to you later about that. So two verses were impressed upon me, written on 3x5 cards, made for me to memorize so that I could quote them back at the supper table. Because I had mean parents? No. I had good parents who wanted me to learn the value of work. Work is not bad. Work is not evil. Work is not a punishment. Work is not something that you say, oh, you know, that's part of the curse. Adam sinned and they kicked out of the garden, they had to work. Oh, boom, boom, boom. How terrible. No, it's what God had Adam working before he sinned, before the fall. Adam was working. Ephesians 4:28. And you have to put the comma in the right place on this verse. It says, let him who stole steal no more. Let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he might have something to give to others who are in need. Now, I, of course, put the comma in the wrong place. It said, let him that stole steal. No longer let him work with his hands. And you know, so be careful there that you quote the verse the way it's written, not the way I'd like it to be. 2 Thessalonians 3, if anyone who's not willing to work, let him not eat. For we hear that some of you walk in idleness, not busy working, but busy bodies. Love that play on words. Now such persons we command in the Lord Jesus to do their work quietly and earn their own living. Work is good. And so our modern system, of course, rewards not working, and there's no value. Nobody feels good about that. Just handed money for doing nothing, and you say, okay, after a while, you begin to think you deserve it. It's not something, a gift or something that's good. And so the church said, we've got to get down here to the heart of the matter. Jesus said to be generous, to give, to help others, so that they won't become criminals and steal. You guys in the church ought to work so that you won't break God's law. And of course, we know that also in our worship, in our religious life, we can rob God. We can rob God not remembering all the good that he's done for us. We've been redeemed, as 1 Peter says, not with corruptible things like silver and gold, but with the blood of Christ. Bought with a price, Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 6. Therefore glorify God in your body and spirit, which are God's. Christians rob God. They say, well, when I get more money, I'll give to the Lord. One fellow told me that he was going to put in his will to give money to the Lord. I thought that's really good. You can live, enjoy the money, invest it, do whatever you want now, and after you're dead and you don't need the money anymore, then you're going to give it to the Lord. That, I didn't say it quite like that. I said, thank you. But think of this through. God wants us to work and be wise with our money, and we rob God. We rob him in not giving him the praise and the glory due his name. I'm convinced that some of the big name television ministries and evangelists and such rob God. I saw one fellow, I don't even know much about his ministry except that I don't like it. His name is like Credo or Crefo or something like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Creflo Dollar.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know the guy. Never met him personally. He's in a different social circle than I am because he has a $30 million home and an $8 million jet that people who are living in poverty are giving him this money so that he can live in it. I call that sanctified stealing, but that's a whole other sermon. We just won't go there today. I don't want to mention names. And now you say, okay, boy, you dealt with the Old Testament and we're not stealing. We're understanding the concept. Are we about done? The rubber needs to hit the road a little bit for this crew. Because we all steal. When we think thou shalt not steal, we think way down the list. In our world today, stealing is almost victimless. Nobody cares if you take a candy bar from the drugstore. Nobody, we're not talking armed robbery or extortion or, a mask and you're going to break in somebody's home and shoot them or something like that. But I've seen stealing at work. People taking all sorts of stuff home with them. I worked at a job where they had a special toilet paper dispenser put in. It had a roll of toilet paper that was too big to get your arms around. It was this big. It had a dispenser, and out the bottom you could take out about one sheet at a time. It would come out and break off and that. And I said, what is going on? And the, you know, my supervisor looked at me and he said, people were stealing the toilet paper rolls out of the bathroom and taking them in their purse back home. I don't know what the women were doing. And they were, and I said, you got to be kidding. This was a Christian organization. But they had toilet paper that was just about impossible to get out, trust me. But because of thievery. See, well, people say, well, I put in a lot of extra time. I deserve those pad of yellow sticky tags and 18 whatever staples or whatever you put in your pocket to go there. At school, people steal answers. Right? Uh-huh. Well, I didn't have time to study because I was serving Jesus. I was giving to the poor or whatever excuse you want. In business, you go into a store and say, well, they inflate the prices. They figure people are going to steal, so, hey, I might as well keep up the image here and just take a little bit. In the legal system, my wife and I learned the hard way about bankruptcy. We're not in trouble. We don't need to be bankrupt or anything like that, but we had someone come into the clinic and say, well, we really want to buy a number of products. We've been thinking about this, and we really want this. And we said, this is fantastic. They spent like $500. Amen. The check bounced. I called the bank, and they said, oh, they filed for bankruptcy the day before. And you can't even bill them. You can't even, that's a done deal. You lose that money, end of discussion. Thou shalt not kill kept going through my mind over and over and over as I saw these people walking through the stores in Casper after they went bankrupt and simply left all their bills unpaid and did it intentionally to us. I don't, you know, if somebody needs bankruptcy, I'm not going to preach on that, but to have it done the day before and then come in and write bad checks, that's just, okay, are we having fun with this so far? Insurance? Well, I'm going to file a claim. I can kind of pad it a little bit here and, you know, what they took. And the union, labor union, well, we'll threaten a strike and we'll get more money so that we can have it to invest and do our thing. The government, where mob rule, that's called democracy, by the way, mob rule, says we're going to impose bigger taxes on rich people. So we can take some of their money and distribute it to everyone, especially us. And that's called, you know, legal stealing, as they use the word for taxation. And the one that really hurt me was the desperation mode. When you see a store that says, going out of business, 80% off, closing our doors. Number one, do you believe that? Or do you believe it's just a sales pitch to get you to come in and spend your money, and they've inflated the prices so high that you can get 80% off and they're still making a profit? That's the way it is many times. But then every once in a while, it might be some little mom-and-pop place and they're going out of business. And I read that in the paper and I think, oh man, I'm going to go there because I can get me some deals. Too bad about them that they're going to rot and die or whatever, you know, that they don't have any money and they're losing their shirt, but I'm going to get a bargain on the deal here. Ha, ha, ha. Did I say that out loud? That's the way our minds think, trying to get the upper hand instead of offering the sympathy and help. If somebody says, hey, I don't have any money, I don't have anything, what did Jesus say? Give to them. Help them. Give them a job. Help them in any way you can. There's only two ways to get money. One is a reward for working, and the other is if somebody gives it to you and helps you. That's it. You can't steal. Okay, thou shalt not steal. You can't do that. That's it. Someone in our seminary, when I was going to school, I was a newlywed. I worked in the slaughterhouse. I've used the illustration before. I put on hip boots, take shovel and big 55-gallon drums and fill it up with blood that was in the slaughter room, an area literally about this size, and be knee-deep or deeper in blood and walk in there and fill it up, sometimes 20 55-gallon drums of blood in the evening. And they said, you know, in 6 months you're going to graduate from seminary, you're going to go get a church, you're going to be a pastor, you're going to be a reverend. Isn't it demeaning to be out there smelling like a dead chicken or turkey at the slaughterhouse and shoveling blood till the wee hours of the morning, coming home, and your wife won't even kiss you good, you know, hello when you come home because you stink so bad? And okay, too much information. And I thought to myself, is it demeaning to do manual labor? Charles Dickens said, any man who's ashamed to carry his own coal deserves to sit by an empty fireplace all winter. I like that. You know, you work. I got good wages for what I did. I worked 6 nights a week like that for about 4 or 5 hours every evening. And I made $99 a week. Think about that. You know, that was like $4 or $3 an hour. Yeah, back in another era when a dollar and a quarter was minimum wage. Okay, so it was good money. But it was demeaning, yeah. But you did it because work is good for you. I would love to have somebody say, oh, well, we'll just give you money. You do that as a church to me. I love you. Did I mention that? I know Pastor Appreciation Sunday, you know, that was wonderful. My wife's already found 5 or 6 things to spend the money on. And the gifts that were given, and I appreciate it, but you realize I get to preach. I get to speak. You got to sit here for, it's been almost 45 minutes now. You sit here and listen to me go on and on and say, aren't you done yet? Thou shalt not steal. You're stealing my time. I should be out of here and eating lunch or something. But you guys give me money to do what I love. I don't work at being a pastor. I don't work at preaching. This is not, you can't envision my mind when I get a check every month from the church and I just smile and think, those guys don't understand it. You know, I do this for free. I didn't say that out loud, did I? I would. I'd do it for nothing. Well, stealing should be taken seriously. Not the mixed signals of today, the slap on the wrist, romanticized in the media. I saw a cop show and the cops are at a door and they can't get in and they look around and say, well, we can't break in here because then the evidence would be tainted and we can't get it, so we got to follow the law. But one of their informants is there with them, says, well, nothing stops me from breaking in, and they just, you know, pick the lock, and the cops walk in, and it all ends up happy. The bad guy gets caught. And I'm thinking, yeah, that just teaches us over and over again, just break the law, just bend the rules, don't worry. It's called burglary, but we won't talk about that. Stealing, little or big, active or passive, it's a sin against God. And today, by the way, it's easier to steal than ever because of cyber crime. Stealing a song or a video or something, nobody even sees it. There's no copy anywhere except on your cell phone or whatever it might be, and we steal. Nobody thinks anything of it. F.E. Marsh, a preacher, told of a young man that when he had finished preaching his sermon on Thou Shalt Not Steal, the young man came up and said, now I'm in a fix. I work in a wood shop. He was 20 years old. He said, I work in a wood shop. And there are some nails and screws there that are brass. Some people need that because they're waterproof and you can use it in decks and boats and different things like that. He said, so I put a handful in my coveralls and I do my work of the day. And then I go home and I say, oh man, I've still got 6 or 8 of those expensive brass screws in my coveralls. So he said, I throw them on my bench at home. And the next day I might do the same thing over and over and over again. Because, you know, preacher, I'm going to be building a boat in my backyard. And you know, I don't have the money for those brass screws and nails. That the preacher said, you ought to tell your boss. That's what you do. Make restitution. He said, the boss thinks I'm a Christian. He'll think I'm a lying thief. He might even fire me. Preacher said, do what God wants you to do. So the young man went, and the next Sunday he came to church and came up to Brother Marsh and said, Brother Marsh asked him what had happened. He said, well, the boss said, yeah, he knew I was a hypocrite. He knew some of his inventory was missing. He figured it was me. But he said, any religion that makes a man admit to stealing a few nails and screws must be a pretty good religion. He said, I should look into that. Charles Finney, another great preacher from last century, said he preached a message. Well, the thing is, he went out on Saturday for a work day and went out to his tool shed, opened it up, and almost all of his tools were gone because he'd loaned them out to people and people had never brought them back. Anybody ever have that happen? People borrow something, don't bring it back? So that Sunday, he preached a message. This is the title of the message: The Sin of Borrowing Things and Not Returning Them. That's preaching right there where the rubber meets the road. And so he preached the whole message on that. Went to bed that night, and in the middle of the night, his dog was barking at somebody out in the yard, and sure enough, it was a number of people who were trying to sneak into his shed to return items that they had borrowed. And he had to go out and call his dog off of biting one of them there. And there, we need to be careful. Even little things, we can say like the thief, God doesn't see. I can get by with it. Nobody cares. Or we can say, I'm going to do right, and I'm going to obey God. At Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, in the winter of 77-78, George Washington had appealed for the neighboring farms not to give food and supplies to a starving army. Y'all know the story. They said, we will pay for it, but they pay for it in script and just fake money that the government was printing out with no value whatsoever. And one of the men, Jacob DeHaven, who believed in the revolutionary cause, lived in the area, and when he heard of this, he gave $50,000 in gold and silver to Washington so that he could buy $1 million worth of supplies for his starving army. They survived the winter, and after the war, DeHaven went to Congress and said, I'd like to be repaid for what I gave. And Congress refused. They said, we just don't have the money. I'm sorry. I think he was one of the unsung heroes of our revolution. By the way, his relatives today have a lawsuit in Washington, D.C. with the federal government to repay with interest at now valued at $1.41 billion his gift. In one sense, money could never repay what that great patriot did. He truly saved our nation in its darkest hour. And when I thought about that, and we're not supposed to be worried about giving, about helping, about sharing, or supplying needs, whatever it is. And I thought, that's what Jesus did. He came and gave freely for those who hated him. That's what God did, as he lavished his love on people who were evil and sinful. Because that's a debt that I could never repay, is what Jesus did. The price he paid to give me liberty from sin. And I'm thankful that he set an example of how I should live honestly, openly, charitably, busily working, and obey the commandment, thou shalt not steal.